You know, I think the biggest thing that we all saw that is accountability. And I think the toughest part for us all is that, you know, there was still a life lost. And I don't know. You know, everybody thinks, you know, because of the verdict, everything is right in the world, but it's not. It's not. There's still a lot of things going on that are unjust, you know, and I send my prayers and wishes out to Makaya Bryant and her family. You know, you think you're getting through one thing and then another thing occurs.
Welcome back to First Take. You heard Chris Paul there reference Makaya Bryant. She was the 16-year-old shot and killed by a Columbus, Ohio police officer after lunging at two people with a knife. The officer could be heard on videotape shouting several times to get down before firing four shots. I have a couple tweets for you. So LeBron James posted and later deleted a tweet yesterday showing a photo of the officer who shot Bryant with accompanying caption, "You're next, hashtag accountability," and the hourglass emoji. Then LeBron later tweeted this, "Anger. Does any of us any good? That includes myself. Gathering all the facts and educating does, though. My anger still is here for what happened to that little girl. My sympathy for her family, and may justice prevail." He added, "I'm so damn tired of seeing black people killed by police. I took the tweet down because it's being used to create more hate. This isn't about one officer. It's about the entire system, and they always use our words to create more racism. I am so desperate for more accountability." Meanwhile, the National Fraternal Order of Police condemning LeBron's tweet with this, "At King James, with his vast resources and influence, should educate himself and, frankly, has a responsibility to do so on the facts before weighing in. This is disgraceful and extremely reckless. The officer saved a young girl's life. No amount of gaslighting will change that fact." Stephen A., your thoughts on LeBron's overall response?
His overall response is to be commended because, as Max highlighted earlier in the show, he didn't double down. He recognized the mistake that he made with his initial tweet and backtracked and recognized the fact that he needed to do more research and educate himself a bit more about the issues. He is to be applauded for that. I stand with him on that. We all do in terms of this show. But there are an abundance of people out there who are critics and cynics of LeBron James, who have a different point of view and view the world from a different lens that he does, that were looking for an excuse to point a negative, skeptical, or cynical feeling in his in his direction, and he handed it to them on a silver platter. The reality is that LeBron James was wrong with his initial tweet. His initial tweet said, "You're next." And then it was a picture of the officer, and it had the word accountability. I'm willing to bet my career, all LeBron James meant was, just like Derek Chauvin had his day in court and he was found guilty, you need to be the next one found guilty as a police officer. But then that brings us to the National Fraternal Order of Police and their statement. And respectfully, I must submit, they were absolutely positively on the money. They didn't say a wrong word. With his influence, with his vast resources, with his power, not only could he have done research, he had a responsibility to do so. And clearly in this case, that is not what happened. The young lady, Makaya Bryant, was wielding a knife. And she was wielding a knife, and that officer shot her. Now, could he have prevented killing her? I believe so. Did he have to shoot at her four damn times? Hell no, I don't believe that for one second. Does all of those things validate LeBron's anger? I believe it does. But here's where the problem lies. As a police officer that I know, a former police officer that I know, I'm sorry, text me this, says, "An officer may use deadly force to prevent serious injury or death to another person. We are trained to shoot center mass, the largest part of the body, to stop the action." That's their training. Now, we can lament that. We can lament the laws in Ohio and various other places that allow police officers to use deadly force, like it was just explained to me. But the reality is that for all intent and purposes, no matter how much we lament the decision that the police officer made, the officer was clearly within his right to do so because he was preventing serious injury to another human being, not himself. And that officer was called to the scene because the person was wielding a knife. He didn't know what was going on, but he walked into a dangerous situation. Again, we can debate whether or not a better decision should have been made. I think it could have been made. You shoot him in the leg or you use a taser gun or something. Why is it that white folks can shoot at people, kill people, and end up being arrested, but unarmed black people are dead? That's a different subject. This person had a knife about to stab somebody else. I saw the video. And so when you take that into consideration, and even LeBron backtracked because he recognized he could have educated himself a bit more. Unfortunately, for those who want to hate and those who want to find something wrong with him, who want to ignore his contributions to our community and beyond, and the iconic figure that he has been and the incredible role model that he continues to be, those people who want to ignore that and were looking for incremental evidence to the contrary, to point a finger at him. One of the rare moments happened with LeBron. He handed it to them on a silver platter. And the National Fraternal Order of Police validated that with their statement because they are not wrong with what they said about this specific incident in terms of what LeBron James' initial reaction was. They were not wrong how they came at LeBron James at all.
The only thing I would say is that they didn't need to use the word disgraceful. In other words, the National Fraternal Order of Police, if they want to be constructive and as a, you know, a body comprised of law enforcement officers, they should have called on LeBron to take down the tweet. They said it's extremely reckless, that he should gather the facts, because look at LeBron's response. Did he double down and arrogantly say, to hell with the facts, I'm leaving that tweet up? No, he took down the tweet. And he said, I have to gather the facts. He agreed with them on the substance.
Hey, Max, before
Their
you go
presentation
on,
saying
I think it was the picture. Yes. I think it was the picture of the officer. I think the word disgraceful came from the fact that you put the picture of the officer up
I
there
agree.
With your necks. I think that's what they're saying disgraceful was. That's what
I
they
agree.
Were talking about.
I agree, but let's talk about what your next could possibly mean. You either have to have extremely low comprehension, or you have to be not a good faith actor, meaning not arguing in good faith, but really having a secret agenda. If you are making the argument that LeBron meant anything else than the legal system when he said you're next, this is coming a day after the Derek Chauvin verdict. An officer was caught murdering a black man. He was convicted on all three counts. LeBron hashtags accountability, shows his picture saying you're next. Now, he admits he needs to gather more facts. He took down the tweet. That's the responsible thing to do. We don't expect people to be perfect, but they should be responsible and clean up mistakes. Did he ever call for violence or insinuate violence? No, he didn't. I'm sorry. Again, the only way you can think that is if you simply have low comprehension, or if you're lying for political to curry political favor with your constituency, as some politicians have done, unless they, in fact, have low comprehension. Look, LeBron didn't dox this officer. Did he privately acquire some information and publicly then display the officer's face? Clearly, this is already public information. He didn't do, like, people are misusing phrases and ideas here. They're sloppy with language and they're sloppy with thinking, and I believe it's intentional. Stephen A., I agree with your criticism of LeBron being that he is in a leadership position. More is expected of his behavior. He's expected to behave more perfectly than others, but not perfectly. And the most we can add, he didn't do anything so reckless as for calling for violence against the officer, releasing information that wasn't already public against the officer. He didn't do either of those things. He simply tweeted before he had all the information and then took down the tweet in response. I would say that people, we should ask ourselves, are the voices that are so outraged by LeBron right now, how outraged were they about Derek Chauvin in the first place. Now, to be fair, the National Fraternal Order of Police was against Derek Chauvin. I'm not talking about them right now. I'm talking about politicians and other voices who were silent then and loud now
over a
relatively benign mistake on LeBron's part that was cleaned up.
First of all, Max, you're not paying attention. I'm not criticizing LeBron. I completely support LeBron. I'm just saying they will. And if I'm being critical of anything, it's him not seeing that they would jump on this and use it for their own means initially. With his corrective tweet, he saw that. But the initial tweet is not a mistake he customarily makes because he sees that. So I think that's incredibly important. Number two, with the Derek Chauvin, can we please stop bringing him up when it comes to, you know, people who were silent? Max, I got to tell you, man, as you know, it's not just my appearances on all the networks and stuff like that and the people that I know in both the progressive and the conservative communities. I got to tell you, Max, I didn't see anyone who spoke out in favor of Derek Chauvin. If there was ever a time where universally everybody looked at a situation and instantly knew that officer was wrong, that was it. Because I got to tell you, I did not hear it. Now, maybe I missed it, but I did not hear, nor did I see on the left, on the right, in the middle, black, white, Asian, Hispanic. I did not see one person that saw that video of Derek Chauvin on George Floyd's neck and think for one second there was anything remotely right.
That's not
about
what I'm saying, though, Stephen A.
That never happened.
I hear you. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is part of the impression people get about networks, media outlets, individuals, and their point of view is how much time they spend on a subject. What's the level of outrage? What do they choose to focus on? That's the editorial process that takes place with individuals. So what I'm saying is, right. So what I'm saying is, for those who would be so outraged by LeBron's behavior, which was simply he got emotional and he acted before he thought it all the way through, and then when it was pointed out to him, he corrected, right? You really want to focus attention on that? Were you focusing the same attention on police interactions with communities of color when the Derek Chauvin trial was going on, when the verdict came out? Or were you instead focusing on, who wants to be a police officer now?
But
they have very hard jobs. You know, like, what were you focusing on?
The argument doesn't hold water right now because LeBron just did the tweet last night. Now, if he did it and we were talking about this a week from now still, that would be problematic. But you can't knock anybody when the tweet just happened last night.
Yeah.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Buckle up, First Take fam. So Hall of Fame quarterback Brett Favre says he did not believe that Derek Chauvin meant to kill George Floyd. On his podcast, Bowling with Favre, he said, quote, "I find it hard to believe, and I'm not defending Derek Chauvin in any way. I find it hard to believe, first of all, that he intentionally meant to kill George Floyd. That being said, his actions were uncalled for. I don't care what color the person is on the street. I don't know what led to that video that we saw where his knee is on his neck, but that man had thrown in the towel." Favre said last week on the Andrew Klavan show he wanted politics out of sports because he believed it was hurting games and agreed with people deciding not to watch sports anymore. Axe, what do you think of Brett Favre's comments?
Well, it's hypocritical of him, of course, to say politics should be out of sports unless it's his politics. I don't think Brett Favre is being dishonest here, though. I think Brett Favre believes what he's saying because it's an issue of empathy. I think he, in this case, is having an empathetic connection with Chauvin and maybe not with George Floyd. And he's thinking to himself, it's hard to relate to someone who would sit on someone's neck, especially a law enforcement official, a cop. He's thinking that's the good guy, right? Why is he sitting on someone's neck? Why would he mean to kill him? And he finds it hard to get his mind around that. I believe he's being honest, sort of misguided in his thinking. But I think there's a larger issue here, Stephen A. I don't even think Brett Favre sees that he's interjecting his opinion here, and it's an overlap of politics and social issues and sports when he says what he says. And this gets back to Kaepernick for me. Stephen A., remember, my whole point about Kaepernick, when people said he's injecting politics into sports, is in fact, if kneeling during the national anthem is speech and protest, then surely standing is also speech, right? If one is speech, then the other is also speech. And so my larger point was those who say, no, this is a national anthem, this isn't political, everyone has to stand, in ways they don't even realize, in fact, are injecting sports with politics. As soon as you have a ceremony like that where lack of participation is viewed as a political statement, then the ceremony itself is political, whether you like it or not. But that's not the way a lot of people see it. It's confusing for them. Wait a minute. We're all in America. We have to love America. This is the way it works. And so that's okay. That's not political. Favre simply doesn't understand that. He didn't understand that then. And I think when he talks like he talks now, after saying we shouldn't have politics, you know, with sports, I don't like it, he doesn't even understand that what he's really saying is we shouldn't have politics other than my own. We shouldn't have people's worldviews on social issues other than my own. He just views his own as the default setting. And that's a lot of what these protests are about. The default setting throughout our country's history seems to be the view of white America. And what people have been saying and athletes have been saying and protests in our streets have been saying is that normal doesn't work for everyone. We need a new normal. And Favre has viewed, it seems to me, through his comments over the last several years, the new normal as political, the old normal as just normal and apolitical. And he's wrong about that. I don't think he's lying. I don't even think he has ill will here, Stephen A. I think he's only capable at this moment of seeing it from one narrow perspective.
I actually like Brett Favre. I like him a lot. I know I've been critical of him in the past, or, you know, his last years in the NFL, because he was a bit prima donnish in terms of not making up his mind as to whether or not he wanted to retire or not. But I've had the pleasure of meeting him on several occasions. I actually genuinely like him. I could say I'm disappointed in these comments, but I don't think that's really what this is about, to be quite honest with you. I'm going to tell you what I think it's about. I think it's the epitome of white privilege, and I think that Brett Favre would do himself a service by simply saying, look, I'm a white guy, I'm a black guy, I just don't get it. I'm not a black guy, I just don't get it. Because he doesn't get it. And that's really what this comes down to. On far too many occasions, again, you know, thinking about the people that I know in the community, the people that I know in terms of on the left side with the progressives, on the right side with conservatives. There have been many conservatives that I've spoken to in the past. You know I know Sean Hannity. You know I know Mark Levin and these guys, you know, and I respect the hell out of them. They know I don't agree with them most of the time, but I'm certainly not going to castigate them because of some of the positions that they've taken. What I would say is that on many, many occasions when I'm highlighting something, I'm simply saying that as a black person, you just don't know. Numbers don't always tell the story. There's so many things that happen to black people that you don't realize that, you know, that don't get recorded, that don't get told. Think about it from the standpoint of the lovely 17-year-old that videotaped Derek Chauvin that Molly brought up yesterday. If she hadn't videotaped it, you also pointed out, Max, what the news headlines were about George Floyd's murder. We would have never known if we didn't have the video showing what Derek Chauvin did to George Floyd. And so many times the true stories don't get told. And so when somebody like Brett Favre comes along, and Brett Favre is of the mentality, I don't want politics, I don't want this in my life, I don't believe this was the case. It's because a lot of times white folks make this huge mistake. And I hope white folks of America are watching me right now with what I'm about to say. If you're not racist and you're not prejudiced and you don't engage in heinous acts, you don't exercise entitlement, you don't look at yourself as above, you know, people because of the color of their skin, and you don't act and conduct yourself that way, and more importantly, you speak out against those who look like you but think like that, okay? We're not talking about you. The reason why it's important to mention that, Max, is because what you're seeing from the Brett Favre's of the world and a plethora of folks throughout white America are people who personalize things as if you're talking about them, like they would do something like that. So they inherently feel this insatiable, you know, just gravitation towards coming to the defense of somebody, because they actually look at it as defending themselves, as if we're talking about them, when that's absolutely positively not the case. Brett Favre wouldn't have done something like that. The individuals that I mentioned earlier wouldn't have done something like that. But when they see us going off and they look at the white population in this country that was once over 80% and has now dwindled to 60% and is sliding, and they see the elevation of minority communities coming into this country, et cetera, they're worried. And because they're worried about what they're witnessing here, they feel this need to hold on to something, to act like they're being victimized when they're not realizing what black folks are saying is, excuse me, the numbers don't tell the whole story, and we're incredibly victimized, and you can't relate because it doesn't happen to you. It's hard for them to grasp that reality sometimes, and that's where we are. That's where Brett Favre is.
All right. I'll leave you with this. So in response to Favre's comments, former NFL receiver Torrey Smith retweeted this. I'm 1,000% comfortable saying if it isn't about playing quarterback, don't ask Brett Favre. Before we go to break, Stephen A., I understand you had something you wanted to enlighten us on here.
Yeah, yesterday when Spike Lee was on, I brought up ownership. I brought up D. Wade in Utah. Didn't seem right.
Yep.
Shaq in Sacramento instead of L.A. Didn't seem right, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I got a call from the Miami Heat yesterday. I haven't been able to reach Dwayne Wade, but according to folks in Miami, Dwayne Wade was offered an ownership stake by the Miami Heat. Mickey Arison wanted him to have an ownership stake in the Miami Heat. And they didn't know about D. Wade, you know, getting an ownership stake in Utah until D. Wade let them know maybe about 24 hours before it was announced. So they just wanted to make sure that folks knew that. Mickey Arison loves Dwayne Wade and wanted Dwayne Wade, you know, to have a similar role in Miami. I reached out to Dwayne Wade. I haven't been able to reach him to validate that, but it was made very, very clear to me that Miami, that's exactly the role they wanted Dwayne Wade to play. And for some reason or another, I guess his relationship with the new owner in Utah or whatever the case may be, that's just the direction that he wanted to go in. But they wanted him to have that role in Miami. It just didn't happen. They wanted to
make
sure
Mickey Arison gave Pat Riley a piece, Stephen A., when the Knicks wouldn't, and that's why he's in Miami now.
Yeah, very interesting. I'd love to hear if that is true, that sentiment, why D. Wade ultimately went with
Utah.
Which
I believe it is.
Maybe we will. Obviously, he's always welcome to join us, friend of the show. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Get your popcorn, everybody, because Saturday UFC 261 is going to be wild. Kamaru Usman defending his welterweight title against this man, UFC star, friend of the show, Jorge Masvidal. Jorge, thank you so much for being with us, sir, making some time. I know you're busy, a couple days away. I want to talk about the main event, though. So obviously you lost Usman last time you guys were together in the octagon. He was with us yesterday. Here's what he had to say. Please listen.
First of all, we call him George. We don't call him Jorge. He don't get Jorge. It's George, you know. And yes, I give credit where credit is due. He's a good fighter, which is why he's still around. He's been around for all these years because he's a good fighter. But I'm a great fighter. I'm an elite fighter. You know, there's a separation. There's levels to this, which is why, you know, look at my record. Look at his record. Look how many fights he's had. And look how many fights I've had, you know, to become champion and to continue to reign as champion. You know, the reason he's in this position right now is because I put him there. You know, he's a good fighter, very, very good fighter. I take nothing away from him. But there's levels to this, and I'm levels above him.
So there's levels to this. He's levels really above you. He's not calling you by your government name. Jorge, what do you have to say?
Well, for starters, my parents gave me that name, you know, so I find it disrespectful. That's why I address him by his name, you know. I'm an immigrant, of course. My parents are immigrants, so I my name is Jorge. It's not nothing other. But it doesn't matter what he says or what he doesn't, because Saturday we're going to fight, and when I break his jaw, he won't be able to pronounce any name, so it doesn't really matter to me.
Jorge, man, it's always good to see you, my brother. It really, really is. I got to ask you, do you believe, when you talk about breaking his jaw, we all know you're capable of anything with those fists, but I must ask you, do you believe that's the way you're going to have to beat him? Because obviously, even though he can do a lot of things, he's primarily known as a grappler, a wrestler. Do you believe that's the only way you can win this fight against him?
Breaking jaws, bones, cheekbones. Last time I broke his nose with 6-day notice, I'm going to play doctor on his face. I'm just going to slice and dice. Whatever I catch, I'm going to take home with me. You know? I see a very violent ending no matter what. I just want to get in and compete.
Jorge, you have, obviously you're a very creative, like inventive, resourceful striker, hands, legs, everything. And you also have a deep kind of bag of skills. You can wrestle, you can do all those things, but he is probably with Habib out of the sport, at least for now. I'd say he's probably the best wrestler, the best guy on the ground in MMA, or at least in the UFC right now. So your wrestling seems to me more like I'm staying out of trouble. Are you trying to keep this fight standing up and avoiding going down? And what do you think of his striking skills, which have seemed to me to improve over the last year or two?
Well, I just fought him months ago, maybe like 8-9 months ago, and then I just saw his last fight. I still think he's the same robotic, stiff mummy that he was 8-9 months ago. His grappling is good for when he's fighting other grapplers because he can defend very well. But offensively, I'll tell you this much, it's nothing special. It's not nothing that I haven't dealt with. I've fought better grapplers like Damian Maya. They can finish guys, you know, guys that are actually mean, that are trying to finish you, you know. He's a guy that's trying to hold, you know. We saw it evident in my fight that every chance he got, just press me up against the cage and do absolutely nothing but run feet. That's what he chose to do. So I don't put his offensive wrestling better than my defensive wrestling. I think he does very well when he competes against other grapplers that he can neutralize their grappling. But offensively, I don't think he's that good. And he got tired in our fight, you know. There's no way that he takes a fight on 6-day notice with 20 pounds of cut and I don't finish that guy. That's my mentality. That's how I am. I'm not going to let you just walk out of here like nothing happened, like you didn't get in the fight. And you know that toenail that's next to your pinky nail? That's the only thing that he bruised on me. That's the only thing that let people know that I was in a fight. That my toenail was slightly bruised. So it's just a different mindset, me and him. You know, he likes to hug men. I like to knock men out.
You do like to knock men out. And I remember when you and I were talking in Vegas, I talked about your style and what you bring to the table. And I think that if you win and you win in a kind of spectacular fashion that you're giving every indication you will win in, you know, when I think about this sport, I think about what Conor McGregor once was. I think about Francis Ngannou and what he is now. And I look at you as a box office attraction. And so I think about it from that perspective. How important is this fight to you as it pertains to your career? I mean, could you tell us where you stand right now as to what this win, a win over Usman, would mean for your career moving forward in the UFC?
When I win, it's everything, you know. Every fight going forward, every fight that I always have in front of me is the most important fight. The one before this one, 10 fights before this one, because I wouldn't get here if it wasn't for that fight. Besides the fact that I've been chasing this title for a very long time, it just, wow. It's kind of hard to express it, but it would mean a lot, you know. It'd be starting a new chapter in my life, and I can't wait.
Jorge, you keep bringing up the fact, and it's legitimate, I had this much time to cut this much weight, took it at the last minute. He couldn't stop me. I mean, like, he stopped Covington. He stopped guys, real good fighters recently, but he couldn't stop you in spite of the fact that you had very little time to prepare. But can you be specific? What's going to be different about the extra time? How is that going to actually affect what you do in the octagon coming up against him?
Well, last time we spoke on the show, I was about 19 pounds, 20 pounds away. Right now, as I stand, I'm 7 pounds away. So all that energy that it's going to take to lose that weight, or that I would have used to lose that weight, I'm going to use it on Usman's face to break his face, you know. So he's going to have to go with me from the start to the end at a different pace that he doesn't have built in him. So he's going to immediately go into the hugging mode. And we've been working since the day I competed against this individual. I've been working on nothing but neutralizing all that man hugging and foot rubbing stuff. So as soon as we get into the fight, all he has to deal with is me trying to take his head off and him trying to hug me. And we're more than ready for the hugging.
You and Ben Askren obviously have a history. You beat him in 5 seconds at UFC 239. What did you have to say about Askren's loss to Jake Paul this past weekend?
And all I got to say is I told you, so I told everybody, the MMA world was mad at me that, you know, he was representing MMA. Never, not once was he representing MMA. How dare anybody say that guy's representing MMA when every interview he's ever done about strikers has been, I don't need to strike. I could just wrestle these guys to the ground. And he's been saying that on interviews for 10 years plus. So now we're supposed to get behind this guy that doesn't respect mixed martial arts, because it is mixed martial arts. It's not just wrestling or just boxing, you know. So obviously when he went in there, I mean,
Jorge,
I called it. I was the first guy to call it. Yes.
Jorge, hello? Jake Paul's been calling out Cormier and different guys. You're known as a striker. If Jake Paul calls you out, what's your response?
He ain't calling me out, man. Come on, bro. Max Kellerman, I've been watching you since I'm 13 years old. You know what boxing is, what striking is. You've also heard the terms of great white hype and stuff like that. Jake Paul ain't calling me out, man. I'm telling you, it's not happening, you know. And I don't mind it. I don't mind some easy money, man. But I didn't grow up in the Disney Channel. I didn't grow up trying to be a famous movie star or any of that stuff, you know. I grew up in a boxing gym. I grew up in a striking gym and a wrestling mat. Weekends, instead of going to parties and networking with people and finding out who's eating what, I was at a gym. I was running my mouth, getting my road work in. I'm not going to get called out by a Disney movie star. It's not going to happen. I respect what he's doing, that he can come into boxing and bring all these eyeballs in there and stuff like that, but he ain't calling me out. It's not happening. We with my whole team be excited as hell. We got a lot of people be excited as hell because that'd be a nice paycheck, but he's going to, I predict he's not going to fight anybody dangerous in this next fight either. And it's not to diss him or nothing. He's got to get some experience in there, but why would he call out anybody that could break his jaw, you know?
Hey, Molly,
yeah.
I before we end it, I don't have a question. I just wanted to say I'm very happy with what Jorge just said. You know what? I respect what the hell Jake Paul is doing in terms of bringing attention, but he needs to fight people that actually box. And when it comes to Masvidal, you're a championship caliber fighter. The hell with that. You got to earn the right to get in the presence of Jorge Masvidal. You don't just sit up there and ask for it. No. You got to earn it. You got to earn that. No.
Well,
don't waste your time.
When it comes to throwing hands, the guy who comes into the ring with Roberto Duran probably knows what he's doing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's my thing, you know.
Jorge Masvidal.
Disney Channel.
You're right.
Yeah. No Disney Channel for you. No fairy tales. Just breaking jaws. Jorge, thank you so much for the time. We'll
Thanks
be watching
lot,
you Saturday night. It's going to be a great event. Great card.
Good
UFC
luck.
261. Check that out, everybody. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. To the Eagles we go. Head coach Nick Sirianni declined to name Jalen Hurts the starting quarterback and instead calls it an open competition. That wasn't the only thing making news. He spoke even further about gauging competition amongst draft prospects. Take a listen for yourself.
And if you guys are wondering, I'll tell you, I think some of you guys are wondering, like, what game? We didn't go earth-shattering on these games, right? I played a couple of them at rock, paper, scissors, right? That was as easy as that. Rock, paper, scissors. Let's see how competitive you are. I'm competitive. I'm going to be talking trash to him. Did you talk trash back to me? Right? Jeopardy. There's different ways to do it.
All right, that brings us to today's NFL Draft Blitz. Take a look at the Philadelphia Eagles draft notes here. Eagles with the 12th overall pick being projected to take a wide receiver, Jalen Waddle out of Alabama. Stephen A., with Sirianni saying he won't name Hurts the starter, do you think Jalen Hurts is being disrespected?
I think so, but I just want to say something. I have this look on my face because Nick Sirianni is not exactly Adam Gase. I don't want to go that far. He doesn't look high. Okay, doesn't look high. But his press conferences are very weird. There's something very non-football, and it's just a little bit different, bordering on bizarre. Now, it might be entertaining now.
Bizarre.
And, it is, you know, I mean, the man just brought up Jeopardy and rock, paper, scissors when being asked questions about his football team. That's just not something you're accustomed to hearing. Now, you don't have to say the same old stuff that all of these other coaches say, but damn, it is a little bit different. And I will say this, okay? And I am unapologetic. Nobody can dispute the fact that I'm an expert with what I'm about to say. If this man struggles, those press conferences will not be funny. I promise you that. He better change it up because the stuff that he's doing in these press conferences with the media, they remember this. I am the former reporter and columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. I am the one who was in those rooms for 17 years. I know what I'm saying about Philadelphia. Angelo Cataldi, one of the great morning radio hosts of all time. He's still there with Rhea Hughes and the crew. With their radio. Mike Missanelli and the boys. I mean, they will eat him alive if this man acts like that and they ain't winning games. So I'm just telling you all right
if
now.
If they start losing, those press conferences are going to be hilarious. As you would say, why are you lying to the American people? And the number one guy who's going to make them hilarious is you. I'm going to get to watch you imitate Coach like every day if they start losing. They're going to be hilarious, those press conferences. What are you talking about? They're not going to be funny. They won't be funny for him. They'll be funny for the rest of us. Rock, paper, scissors. How about watching tape? Tape don't lie. You want to know how competitive someone is? Jalen Hurts not being disrespected here. Look, he's a promising young quarterback. He is. You saw it in the Arizona game. Even in a loss, there were flashes where you go, that kid can play, right? And he's going up against Kyler Murray and another really good young quarterback and you go, that he belongs. But there was enough inconsistency to still have questions, right? I wouldn't say there's a slam dunk. Oh, he's for sure going to be a great quarterback in the NFL, but I wouldn't rule it out either that he's going to be a very good quarterback. So I wouldn't say he's being disrespected. And Stephen A., one of the issues is the team responded very well to Jalen Hurts. But the fact of the matter is the team responded to almost every quarterback that wasn't Carson Wentz very well. And even at times, Carson Wentz, they responded too well. I just look at Wentz when he was there. Whenever they had another quarterback in, the team came to life. Nick Foles, the team came to life. They won the Super Bowl, although they were very good with Carson Wentz. The next year, they were dead, flat. Nick Foles, they came to life again. I even think about Josh McCown when he came in the playoff game. They didn't lose to Seattle any worse than they lost in the regular season with Wentz under center. McCown was on one good leg, and he was 40 years old. So, like, I think it is questioned. Like, yeah, the team responded well to Hurts, but how much of that is just he wasn't Carson Wentz? So there's reasons to have hope, and there's also reasons to maybe want to hedge your bets. I would not say putting him in a competition is disrespectful to Jalen Hurts.
I would say to you it's disrespectful when the backup is Joe Flacco. I say that. I'm in a competition with Joe Flacco at this stage and point in his career. This ain't 2012.
Didn't he win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I said this ain't 2012. I'm in a competition with Joe Flacco. Hell yeah, it's disrespectful. You traded away Carson Wentz. Okay, you traded away Carson Wentz in part because you have me. You brought in this new coach that we don't know whether he's Gason or not. We have no clue. We assume he's not, but we don't know. You got Jalen Reagor as a wide receiver, okay? You got Fulgham as another dude. You talk about drafting Jalen Waddle, all right, out of Alabama. I'm like, Joe Flacco's my backup, and you can't even say coming into training camp, it's my job unless I lose it. We all know you got to keep the job, Matt. But you can't sit up there and say definitively to open training camp, this is our starting quarterback for now, with Joe Flacco as the alternative.
I want to see a Sirianni impersonation.
That is disrespectful.
How would you do a Sirianni impersonation? That's what I want to know.
I haven't mastered that yet. I haven't mastered
yeah,
that yet.
He's gotta
but
study
I just
the tape.
Tell you,
real thespians putting
it
the
ain't,
work.
It ain't
you can't make
gaze,
him just do it on the spot like
but
that.
But it's very gay-like.
Okay. Settle down,
not,
Tiger.
I'm not.
Settle
I'm
down.
Not
gay-like.
Over the last four games, Jalen Hurts had a QBR and completion percentage 23rd in the league amongst quarterbacks. Guys, let's go to the Patriots, shall we? Continuing with our NFL draft blitz, we move on to New England. The Pats hold the number 15 pick in this year's draft. Right now are projected to take quarterback Mac Jones, 7th overall, after a trade with the Lions. In all of Bill Belichick's tenure as head coach, the team has never addressed the quarterback position in the first round. Obviously, we know why. Elephant in the room. Max's favorite quarterback. Max, do you think drafting a quarterback should be a priority? Priority number one, that is, for Bill Belichick.
No, I don't. Because when you do it that way, especially if you're not picking first overall, what you start to do is kind of wish a guy into existence, right? Like, well, maybe he, and even if it's not the guy, I don't think that's Bill Belichick's style anyway. But if there was a quarterback that he loved, if he loves Trey Lance or Mac Jones and they slip enough where he can make a little move up and grab them, he already said, theoretically, he would do something like that. But you don't do it just because quarterback needs to be a priority. And I'll tell you why. I think people are snoring on Cam Newton. I'll remind everyone, with no weapons, in a brand new situation, coming off catastrophic injury, into a COVID year with no preseason, with the facilities shut down a lot, and then he got COVID, Cam Newton came two plays away from being 9-7. As it was, he was 7-9 with a slew of wins against good quality teams. You mean to tell me in year two he's going to be worse? No, I think if Belichick hits on some weapons in the draft on offense, if he hits on some targets for Cam Newton and some guys to help him out, that the Patriots will be very competitive to win the division, even with the Bills and the Dolphins looking really good this year with Cam Newton. So if he sees the right quarterback, Stephen A., grab him. But don't just make quarterback a priority, frankly, because it doesn't need to be at this moment.
Max Kellerman, with all due respect, you sound clueless.
and you sound clueless because just the other day you were sitting there talking about how the New York Giants should draft a quarterback even though they got Daniel Jones, who just started in the damn league, for crying out loud. Last year with COVID don't count, but Cam Newton is approaching 32 if he's not already 32. Clearly, he's not the running quarterback that he used to be. He's incredibly athletic. You know, we all understand that. But there has been some slippage in that regard because of attrition and what has happened to his body from a durability perspective due to injuries. We all know he hasn't been the most accurate pass in the world. We're looking at how they're bereft of weapons at the wideout spot, even though they just acquired Nelson Aguilar and Hunter Henry as your tight end there with Nelson Aguilar as a receiver. But the bottom line is there's some huge question marks about this team, this offense, and primarily as its about its quarterback. So if those questions exist, why would you not draft a quarterback if you're in a position to do so when we all know it would be one of the five, not Trevor Lawrence, but a Justin Fields, a Trey Lance, a Zach Wilson, etc., or Mac Jones? It's going to be one of those four if they were to draft a quarterback. Why would you sit up there and say the New England Patriots, who obviously have a quarterback that's a huge question mark in Cam Newton, and we all know Daniel Jones has never been league MVP and the resume doesn't compare, but he's also considerably young. He just got here. Why would you say don't bother drafting a quarterback for New England, but insist that the New York Giants draft a quarterback?
Well, first of all, I love the old Max, no disrespect, but you're a fool, number one. And number two, you're not listening. I'm making the same argument for – I do. I'm making the same argument for the Patriots that I'm making for the Giants. The same argument. I'm saying you don't go in thinking I got to grab a quarterback. I'm saying if a guy you really like, we know who's going one and two. So it's Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson. But if a guy you really like, if you like either Justin Fields or Trey Lance or Mac Jones or someone else – and they're right there for you to grab, or you have to maybe move up a slot or two to grab, then take them. I would suggest that for Bill Belichick, for the Giants, for any team where you don't have a sure thing at quarterback, even if the Giants like Daniel Jones and his trajectory, even if the Pats believe in Cam Newton,
then you grab that guy if he's right there for you. Saying anybody that's got a question mark at the quarterback position should draft a quarterback, then we don't agree. My answer is correct. It's yes. You're damn right they should draft a quarterback. Because Cam Newton's a huge question.
He also called you clueless,
you
Max.
That wasn't very nice, Max,
either, when he tried to be disarming. That was another one of the things he said. Tomorrow's draft blitz, the Chicago Bears and the Arizona Cardinals, and Stephen A. going one-on-one with Trevor Lawrence. Goodbye, everyone. We'll see you in the morning.